Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, I'm Tom Weber. Thanks for listening to NPR News. This hour, a powerful conversation with a group of Native American students in Western Minnesota. This is an event from earlier this month at the University of Minnesota Morris, about 3 hours west of the Twin Cities. The campus has a long and difficult history in Indian country, but that history is not hidden. It's something we talked a lot about during the event. It was a group of Native students that contacted us asking NPR News to come out and have a conversation. And we're so glad they did. About 20 to 30 Native students came together in a talking circle, and we spent the time passing around a microphone. I asked a few questions here and there, but the students really drove the conversation. So here's the history. The land that is now Western Minnesota belonged to the Dakota and Lakota people. But even more important to this story, the University of Minnesota Morris is on land that housed an Indian boarding school in the late 1800s. These were schools built across the country to house young Native American children who were sometimes stolen from their parents. They were taught, basically, how to be white, learn English, and forget all those cultural and spiritual things you knew from growing up Native. The mantra was to, quote, kill the Indian and save the man. One reason people don't think a lot about in terms of why Native American students have lower performance in schools is trust in the very institutions of education. If the only school you know is one that made you cut your hair and learn English and never see your parents, would you want your kids to go there or your grandkids? And those boarding schools are close enough in our history that current students at Morris have relatives still alive who were in boarding schools. One of the original boarding school dormitories is still used on the current Morris campus, something very much not lost on the students. When the Sisters of Mercy transferred ownership of the school to the state of Minnesota, it was done so with the stipulation that all Native students going forward be able to attend school there tuition-free. Current state law reads, "The University of Minnesota Morris branch shall admit Indian pupils qualified for admission at all times free of charge for tuition and on terms of equality with white pupils." That tuition waiver is one reason why Native students make up 20% of all students at Morris, compared to just 1 or 2% at most other non-tribal colleges and universities in the country. The conversation this hour will sound different than what you usually hear on NPR. You usually hear one or two or three voices, and we didn't do that. We were in a talking circle, and so you're going to hear a couple dozen different voices this hour. On radio, that's hard to keep track of who said what, so don't try to do that. It's more important to simply experience the overall theme of what's being said. Here's our conversation.
So I'm Rhiannon. I grew up in a really small town, Onamia, Minnesota, which is just south of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Reservation. But I'm not Ojibwe. And in my school, if you weren't part of the res, if you weren't Ojibwe, you weren't Native. My family comes from Standing Rock, and I'm Lakota. And in high school, well, all through, I went there K through 12. And I wasn't Native because I wasn't from the res, but I don't exactly look white. So there was like this middle ground of like, am I Native enough? Am I Native at all? But people don't think I'm white. So I didn't really learn about my Native culture just because it was like, oh, I'm not that. So it was really, really cool coming to Morris and being able to be like, yeah, maybe I am Native enough.
Buju Angela Nindijinakas, Pikwalix Ninda, Makwanindodim. My name is Angela. I'm from Pequot Lakes. I am from the Bear Clan of the Anishinaabe. And I'm from a town that, even though I grew up visiting my relatives on the reservation in Boys Fort, I grew up in a town that was 98% Caucasian, and we would joke that my family was the 2%. non-Caucasian people. And so coming to Morris, it was the first time that I was immersed in a community of Native people. And it was like the first time that, you know, I grew up around a lot of white people always asking me, like, you know, how much Native are you? What's this? Do you have a drum? You know, just kind of typical questions that you hear every day. So coming here was unique. And I think it was like the first time I like had to ask myself, like, what does it mean, you know, to my family, to my relatives, to me, that I'm Native, regardless of how other people label me or what they say I am. But I think, though, even though we have a large population of Native students here, the more you are active in the Native community here, the more you have to go head on a lot of problems the Native community has. It doesn't go away here. Even though there's more of us, even though we have a lot of support, the more you're immersed, the more you realize a lot of Indigenous issues and just issues within the community. But I think what's really unique about like NAS and a lot of the students here is that you have a lot of young Native people growing to be leaders in our, not only here, but then when we go back to our reservations. And I think that's what I learned a lot. But even though we kind of like talk about that, everyone knows about the tuition waiver, we can pass our people can pass and go and study in the buildings that were the dormitories from the boarding school and not even know that that's where they are. And so we're constantly working to decolonize our minds and our peers' minds, because even though we might know the history, a lot of people don't, or they don't care. And so I think that's where we're seeing a lot of young Native people like step up. So.
And just to clarify, NAS, that's Native American Studies. Do I have that right?
Yeah, Native American Student Success.
Native American Student Success. Very good. Thank you for that. I think I'd love to come back on some of the themes you brought up too. I think you stated it very well.
My name is Demi. I'm from System Wapton Sioux Tribe. My experiences are kind of like exactly opposite of that, because I grew up really knowing who I was. And I went to, it's not really a private school. It's more like a tribal school back in South Dakota.
On the reservation? Was it on the reservation?
Yeah, it was on the reservation. So I took all like tribal government, tribal history, my language and stuff all throughout from third grade to my senior year. And then coming here, it was really flipped from what everyone else says, because I felt like I wasn't represented. My grandfather was someone who was taken away from his family and went to boarding school when he was, I think he was really young. He was like 5. So I just find it really profound that one of his granddaughters is graduating from a college that used to be a boarding school, and I think that's really powerful, and I just always get overwhelmed.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate it.
Hello. My name is Sarah Croning. Before I came to Morris, I knew nothing of my history with being Ojibwe, but when I came here and I was in NAS, I really started to learn and get more educated. And through that, I learned more about my family than any of my family knew, because my grandma, her mom, I just found out was in a boarding school. And so we have to do these interviews for school for this class I'm taking with Kevin Whalen for an Indigenous history class, and they didn't know what boarding schools were actually like. And I don't know, I'm just really grateful that I can like learn and educate my own family about their history, about something that they never knew, because it's just not talked about. And I think it's important that programs like NAS and here at UMM, you just like talk about the issues around that's going on. Because without any of the students here, you know, any of the faculty people here that I know, I wouldn't have learned this much about my family and about what's going on around me. So I'd just like to thank them and everyone here.
Hi, I'm Nina Valentini. Again, hi. I think, you know, like a lot of people, I didn't really come from a reservation. I didn't know many other Native people. And so I didn't even know much about my own people. And being so isolated, I came from a high school where when I said I was Native, people are like, ah, those people are dead. Their culture's gone. I'm like, no, I'm standing right here. Thank you very much. And coming here, the thing is that our population is so big, nobody can say that anymore. Not here, because the people know somebody who's Native here. The whole community recognizes us and is able to be more exposed to who we are as a diverse group of people and our culture. You know, having the powwow here and, you know, having it be open to the public is a great opportunity, I think, for everyone. And having a lot of Native students and maybe some non-Native students just be able to discuss Native topics from our own experiences and seeing what different takes we have on it is just so amazing. And it's just something I've always wanted in my life, and that's what I love about Morris.
My name is Jade, and when I was first coming to Morris, I felt really insecure about my own identity, because I am part white and I'm also part Native. So coming to Morris, and I got the pamphlets for the Native American Student Success Program, and I was really excited. So honestly, throughout this semester and last semester, it's been kind of an awakening. And because I used to be so insecure, because where I come from, people would always tell me that, oh, she's half-breed, she's not even Native, or, she doesn't even practice her way of life, or whatever. And it kind of, really, struck me down. So I've always was embarrassed to tell myself that, hey, I'm a Native American. And it's just, because I didn't grow up, living traditional, and they just didn't teach me that way. But now it makes me want to let more people know that it's okay to be Native American, and it doesn't matter what percentage you are, you know, because we're all just human and we're just people and we're just trying to find our own sense of place here. And it makes me really, that was one of my biggest problems I've had in my life, and I honestly feel so much better about it now.
I'm Jacqueline Schneider, and I grew up in Shoreview, Minnesota, and I went to Moundsview High School, and there it's very white populated. So when I would say I was Native, people would be very surprised because I just look like a tan white person. And I remember my senior year, I was talking about being Native, and there was a junior standing near me like, oh my gosh, I wish I was Native. You get so many scholarships. Oh, I didn't know that's what Native was being about. That's cool. Glad you love our culture here. So I think there's not a lot of information, especially for non-Natives. I mean, even for Natives that aren't super connected with their culture, we don't have a lot of information, and I think it would just be better if somehow that information would be accessible by others so that they understand. Also so that they don't ask weird questions oh, do you have a drum? And stuff like that. I mean, I guess they're just curious or whatever.
Yeah. I'm a little nervous, so
no worries.
Forgive me. I'm still not entirely sure about my identity and who I am. And I'm not sure if I will be, because there are so many things that I feel are at question. But I know that Morris is helpful for me because it's helpful for my grandfather, who had to go to a boarding school and no longer can speak the language that he knew growing up. And it's good to be a part of reclaiming something that he lost, because it makes me feel like I'm doing a service to him, and that's why Morris is so important to me.
I kind of wanted to go back to what Demi was talking about, being a Native student at an institution that used to be a boarding school is really kind of weird. I don't know a good way to explain it, I guess. I get overwhelmed even thinking I'm graduating from a place that used to take away our grandpa and grandma's, our parents, some of our parents, you know, cultures. If you're not a Native student or a Native person on this campus, you can just go every day not thinking about it. And I don't know about you guys, but I think about it all the time.
It's Angela again. Even though there's really cool things about, you know, having a Native community
delving into our culture more, depending on, you know, your identity. But it's still frustrating being here sometimes, and kind of talking about how recent the boarding school was, but there are myself included and other students in this room whose parents got taken away from their families. My dad got taken away from his family before the Child Welfare Act, Indian Welfare Act, got passed. And then you'll be in class and they'll talk about it. They'll be like, oh yeah, this act happened. Mm-hmm. And while other people can be like, okay, interesting, let me remember that so when we get tested on it, you're just like, that was my dad.
He was taken away to be placed with a white family.
Yep, taken away. The Indian children would be taken away. They would tell my dad and his sisters and my grandma, hey, we're going to take your kids to get them flu shots. And then they'd never see them again. And that happened to our parents, you know, too. It happened. And it's being taught as, like, you know, history. But we don't, other people don't feel that, you know.
Does it affect how you go to school? Does it affect your ability to still get a diploma and graduate from college? I mean, do you think about that?
I think you feel responsible.
Responsible for what? To
do, you know, when you're here, especially if you're here on the tuition waiver, you're not just responsible for yourself, right? You have like your entire relatives, your entire family, your grandma, your grandpa, their grandma, their grandpas in mind, that you feel the weight of like, we need an education in this world. We need to go back to our reservations to help. We need to teach our language. Our languages are dying. We need to teach our children, our culture, you know. There's everything's constantly trying to take your culture away, even when you're intentional about keeping your culture or going to native groups. Like, the world is still telling you to be white, and that to be white is to be successful.
You going to add something,
Ray? Yes, I just wanted to add that one of the things that this kind of highlights is the whole concept of native identity, because there are students on campus who are American Indian who don't know that history about themselves, are their families, and it's really tough to feel that unless you experience. And so in a way that they're kind of left out, even though they're American Indian. It's kind of a catch-22 for some students, because you see the emotional impact that it has on some students. And do you really want to open that wound in your own soul?
Every single day.
Yes.
Going to class.
Mm-hmm. So for some students, the way that they deal with it is to not deal with it. And it doesn't make their trauma or identity any different or less important. It just makes it, it's one of the several balls that Indian students have to juggle on a daily basis.
Sierra here. So I guess talking about like trauma that students carry with them, like Angela, our dad was adopted off of his reservation as soon as he was born. And he was moved to Wisconsin with a great family, but not until he was our age did he even know that he had sisters and nieces and nephews alive. And that he had family out there that he never knew existed before. And so that's like not until he was 20 years old did he start to even look at himself as a Native American and what that meant. And so growing up, that identity has been passed on to us as well. And I guess my biggest thing about Morris is that I want to be educated. So that's one of the reasons I decided to be an NAIS major, was so that I could have this knowledge of what has happened in the past and that I can pass that knowledge on to others. I don't want people to be ignorant to what has happened in this country in the past. It's something that we need to, like, as Americans, as the U.S., we need to own up to. And I went all through my school years not knowing any Native history in general. Whatever I knew, I had to look for on my own. I did a senior project in high school on the hangings in Mankato, one of the largest mass hangings in the U.S., the largest mass hanging in the U.S. And my entire class had no idea that happened there. I was in Rochester, Minnesota, so
not far from me.
So, and they didn't know that was right in their own backyard. And Minnesota itself has such a rich Native history in it that people just don't know. And so coming to Morris, that was one of my biggest things, is I wanted to be educated myself so I could educate others on, and so that they could know more about, so that they don't have these stereotypes about what a Native is and stereotypes about why Natives are the way they are and stuff like that. So that was one of my main reasons for coming to Morris.
This is Rhiannon again. A common theme that we're all talking about is trauma. And there's a term that I learned about for the first time this semester, which is historical trauma. And historical trauma is a trauma that is passed on through generations. So it starts with some traumatic event, and this person experiences that, and it changes the way they live, it changes the way they grow up, it changes the way they parent. And because of that, their child experiences effects from that trauma, and it changes the way that they live, and maybe it changes the way that then their child lives. And here you have a trauma that spans generations. And it has been looked at a lot from Holocaust survivors because it's such a well-known trauma. But where it's not really getting looked at, or only a little bit, is with the Native American boarding schools, because you have entire generations or multi-generations who have been incredibly traumatized. And they are experiencing PTSD symptoms, but no one talks about it. But it still is getting passed on to their children and their children. And then you have a group of Natives here who, talking about it, get super emotional, even if they're not super attached to their Native identity like I am, but it's emotional because of that historical trauma. And I think that's something that, like, you know, we don't talk about the boarding schools and it happened in the past and all of this stuff, but, like, it's here. I mean, it's here right now, and it's not getting talked about. It's not getting faced or treated, and that's really sucky.
It's not getting addressed here on campus or in the general?
Just in general, I would say. Like I said, the first time I even heard of historical trauma was in my senior seminar class this semester. And I mean, it doesn't, we can talk about it, and making that awareness is great, but it goes back to, like, how do you treat trauma? How do you treat PTSD? And it's not just the generation that's sitting here, but it's maybe our parents or our grandparents or our aunts and uncles. So it's not something that you can just address with one person, but it's families.
I'm Tom Weber. You're listening to a conversation from earlier this month in Morris, Minnesota. Native American students from the University of Minnesota Morris invited us to campus, and we held this talking circle.
So, like, growing up, my grandmother, when she was, like, in middle school age, she moved to a white town, and she got bullied for being Native. And I guess that kind of stuck with her, and throughout life she tried to make herself as white as possible. And she came to me when I came here, and she told me that she's really proud of me for coming and learning about her history, because she felt as though she couldn't learn about herself because she got bullied for it. And I don't know, it just feels great being here because I get to learn the language, and I get to be around other Native students.
Alex Komet here. When I first transferred here as a student back in 2010, at the time there wasn't any language programs, whether it was Dakota, Ojibwe. There wasn't any Indigenous language programs here at UMM whatsoever. Like, you could go your entire day and never hear anybody say Buju, Miigwech, etc. But I had recognized that, for myself anyway, language is medicine, it's healing for myself. And I wanted to be able to share that gift with my peers, with my fellow Anishinaabeg. So that was my reasoning for pulling together the Ojibwe language table, community Ojibwe language table here at UMM. And we chose that boys' dormitory, what's now the MRC, MSP building, picked it out for its spiritual importance, in the fact that that's where those, being the oldest dormitory on campus, I get the sense that there was probably a lot of pain going to sleep at night, just having your language taken away from you, whether it was Dakota, Ojibwe, Michif, from what I hear through my research, it's mostly midshif speakers amongst many of the youth that were here. But to bring that back in a place that it was taken away and where there was so much pain, for me, I felt at that time that it's, I still feel that way, that it's a profound thing. So, you know.
May I ask, because there are experiences I'm hearing that other populations of people might also experience in a similar way. The phrase PTSD was used, and I think about students who are military veterans, right? And so maybe there's a little sliver of the experience where there's a shared experience. I think about immigrant students who maybe their parents don't speak English and they're the first to go to college, and maybe there's some shared. Is there any desire to kind of grab what I just referred to and say, well, maybe we could bring in those people and try to navigate this? Or is it actually more important to say no? Our, I don't want to say issues, but our experiences are very important to be shared and addressed among simply Native populations. Do you see what I'm asking? Is that a fair question? What are your thoughts on that?
I'll take this one. So I think in a lot of my Native studies classes, we've talked about that kind of the idea of multiculturalism in America and its prevalence in kind of social justice circles, like the desire to bring people together to like get their narratives across. But indigeneity is usually the exception. Like even though indigenous identity is a historically underrepresented group and shares that in common with a lot of other groups, there's something different about being indigenous, and there always will be, especially in this country, just because I think it's really tempting to talk about indigeneity in the context of other historically underrepresented groups, but I think it's really important to look at the structure of colonization for indigenous peoples as its own separate entity.
And did you, while we're passing the mic, did you want to add?
Yeah, Demi here again. I think the whole historical trauma is very unique to Native communities, and bringing in outside people like war vets would be, not harmful, but it wouldn't have the same impact that bringing other Natives in would.
I was just going to jump in on the on this discussion. I would be hesitant to include like other groups kind of for the sole purpose, like if you're doing that, it seems like it's almost a way of like sweeping indigenous issues under the rug by masking it with other groups. And I think like that's what's been going on. That's why people like think that the boarding schools and stuff is so far in the past. And like I grew up on a res, and even though it's like not where my family was from. And like there are still people today that can try to justify like the children that were sold. Like, because there was a letter that recently surfaced like from a nun or whatever selling Native children for $10. And it wasn't that long ago. And, like, there were people that I was talking to today, and they were like, well, maybe it was for, they had good intentions, you know, whatever, and, like, still try to justify that. And so that's why I think it's important to keep Native issues standalone to make it stronger, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. Your name's Tom, right?
Okay. Yeah, my name's Tom. In my dorm room, I keep above my bed a copy of my great-grandfather's boarding school diploma from when he got out of Carlisle. I keep on my desk a photo of my grandfather and his dad. I'm a standing in front of their house on the res, which was made out of plywood and had a roof made out of tar paper. I keep these things with me so that I can remind myself and that I can show other people, because I think it's important for people to be exposed to these issues so that, one, they never happen again, and two, they don't become forgotten or just a part of history, but that they are remembered and are remembered as recent.
So, yeah, going off of that, I think historical trauma needs to be looked at as a whole system and treated as a whole system. So that goes for all groups suffering from it, Holocaust survivors, immigrants, and Native American people. But I think the issues should stay separate. I don't think that Native peoples in the United States have the same experience as first-generation immigrants. It's a very different trauma. And while the biological impacts, the stress response, overloads of cortisol, or in some cases too low cortisol levels, will be the same throughout all aspects of trauma, I think we need to keep the healing separate in general, just because of the... It's not exactly a shared experience. We all have pain, but it's never the same pain.
So I have a slightly different opinion than people here. So I think that earlier you asked, like, what can other colleges learn from Morris? Mm-hmm. Because we do certain things that seem to work for us. And I am all for looking at how other people are doing, how they are healing, like trying what they are trying. Because if it works, that's awesome. If it doesn't, then you try something else. You find solutions from other areas while not, I guess, diluting the issues and like the heart of the issues. You find your inspiration for fixing it from other places.
And we should just say out loud, too, because we haven't, through no fault of anyone, but another very prominent trauma in this country is slavery and Black America.
Yeah.
And so just to make sure that's a part of the conversation as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, like, because there are issues people are dealing with the past, and we have, I think, it's very easy to write off Native issues because everyone does see it as very much in the past. Like, oh, it was all way back when America was starting, and then they all just died out eventually. But that's not true.
It's Angela again. I liked a lot of what people said. Kind of going back to your question, I believe everyone has a role in other people's traumas healing. But sometimes that role looks like sitting in your room and reading a book and educating yourself and not trying to be the healers, but allowing people the space and the environment to heal. And that's what I think a lot of other people's roles are. And what Veronica said about acknowledging trauma and not saying that, you know, it's my life is harder than yours, but acknowledging that it is different, and kind of what Bagwaj, Alex said about, we have different ways to heal, right? And not only do we have different ways to heal, but the way we need to be healed and the way we connect with things is different than other people. We're, you know, connected with the land, and we're kind of talk about that with like the boarding school, like our pain isn't just with us, it's not just with our ancestors, it's not just with our relatives, it's with our language, it's with the land, and just knowing that, you know, the land that our relatives are from aren't just reservations. We were put on those reservations. We were forced on those reservations and trying to get us all in the same spot so they could kill us off. And so because we're connected differently with different things, with the language, with the land, and more things, we need different ways to heal, and that looks through learning or dancing or singing or praying.
I don't want to totally lose sight of the clock. One thing I would be interested in, what would be a message in the spirit of this going out on radio across all of Minnesota, from a campus that has 21% of its population American Indian, what would be the message to the rest of the state, which is about 2% American Indian, and to other college campuses that, excluding tribal colleges, that are 2 to 3% American Indian? What would be your message to those, to the rest of everyone, to take away from this conversation, but also then to go forward and be part of the solution?
There's been a lot of people talking about not feeling Indigenous enough, and that's very intentional, because one of the main goals of colonization was to erase Indigenous peoples. And one of the ways they did that is by enacting a system in which you have to prove you're Indigenous. And who's going to stand up for Indigenous rights if nobody feels Indigenous enough? So that's something to think about.
So I think one of the major takeaways I'm hearing from all of us is that we are looking for a way to heal on this campus and heal all of society in general. And this campus does have several professors who are working towards that, our NAIS staff, as well as Dr. Heather Peters, who's a psychologist. And a few of us in this room are working with her. And she has implemented a program in junior highs around the state of Minnesota to educate about Native American issues, specifically Dakota systems and culture. And it's more of a way to show that we are still here as a people, but also as a way to make ourselves proud of who we are and where we are, where we come from.
I think one of the main things to take away from this talk specifically is the sense of resiliency that we all show. And whether you feel like it or not, you're unapologetically Indigenous in your own way. And we're still here. We're still kicking it. We're still laughing, even if we have some dark humor. We're resilient, and that's something you hear throughout history about us, and you can see it in everyday life, even today.
Okay, so one thing, we were talking to a family friend recently, and she pointed out that Natives aren't generally represented on statistics unless they're bad, so, you know, highest alcohol rates, you know, suicide rates, stuff like that, but they don't talk about, I mean, this campus specifically kind of does, you know, we have 20%, 21% Native, which is good. But generally everywhere else, they don't really talk about how many of us are going to college and getting this higher education. So I think I want everyone to know that we are out here and you can get a higher education. You don't have to stay where you are, and you can do, you know, whatever you, yeah.
So for all the women in this room, did you see Wonder Woman? When I watched that movie, I cried so many times for finally seeing someone who I could relate to on the big screen and doing these powerful things. And she was kind, and she was brilliant, and she was strong, and she did all of these amazing things. And it was like, yes, I can see someone who I relate to. We had a powwow here just like last week, and sitting up on the track by the concessions watching it, I got that same feeling. And seeing yourself and your people's represented in such a strong, powerful way is huge. So I would say to all the Native populations out there, if your students, just like, be proud and show it, because maybe someone is out there who hasn't seen it yet and hasn't gotten that feeling. And I think that's what we should try to grow, because it's great.
So one of my biggest takeaways that I'd like everyone, Native or non-Native, is to educate yourselves, I guess. That's something I'll always push for probably the rest of my life, is to educate yourselves on Native people, because still to this day, like last week, I got asked, oh, it must be nice to get free money to go to school and stuff like that. And when I try to explain to them how I can be half Native but only a fourth federally recognized and enrolled, they're like, oh, well, that's weird. And they just don't understand things like that. And that's something I think people should understand, like just basic information about what a Native identity is in the U.S. and stuff, because it is not just one stereotype. It's everyone in this room. And that's something that I think is really important moving forward in the society we're in, is just to recognize all these different identities.
I wanted to say for like the future students that just don't ever, ever feel ashamed or embarrassed about who you are when you come here, whether no matter how Native or how much Native you don't feel you are. This is a place where you can begin anew. You can find out who you are through friends and community and be able to create your own sense of identity. And to the state, I would just like every person to know that when you go down to the convenience store, when you walk down the street, when you go to school, we're everywhere. You may not see us, you may not recognize us, but you're going to see us and you're going to meet us. And I would like you to keep in mind that we're going to be your doctors. We're going to be your children's teachers. We're going to be your historians. We're going to be down at the DMV getting, you know, our first licenses with our kids, you know. Just keep in mind that, you know, we exist. We have feelings. We are people. And keep in mind your ignorance, and to make sure that you always work on just trying to get to know your neighbor better and being able to be a better ally.
My takeaway is very similar, which is only just this year did I even consider myself Native. And that was because I felt obligated to, because I was using this waiver, and I was like, well, now I feel obligated to do this. But here at Morris, I feel very appreciative to have the opportunity to experience all of the culture and history I didn't grow up with and didn't consider a part of myself. But I feel less obligated and more appreciative of having this opportunity, and it's never too late to start learning about your own culture and history.
It is not at all required that everyone speak, but just as we are coming towards the end, if there is anyone who hasn't spoken who would like to, we would absolutely love to hear from you. Not a requirement, I just want to throw that out there in our final minutes, too.
I'd say takeaway some people touched on is that Native people don't always or don't look like the Redskins mascot, you know, or alive. And some of us are like me and white with blue eyes, very, very white passing. And some of them are beautifully brown. And our identity is complicated, and in Morris, you can see that a lot. You can see that around this room. Well, the people listening can't see it, but you can trust me. And so being Native is beautiful, and it's hard, and it's who we all are, and we all have our own stories. We all have our own histories, and I think in Morris, that's where you can see it the most.
We hope you've enjoyed this conversation from this month at the University of Minnesota Morris. Thanks to the Native American Student Success Program, which invited us there, and a longer version of this conversation will be posted at nprnews.org.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.